Hello everyone, you are listening to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon. Today we begin our Newsworthy Clips article on page 32. In the studio I have Campbell and Ellen. Welcome to the program, panelists.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you.
And today we're talking about food and the brain. And I like the first part of that. I like to talk about food. But we're actually talking about the connection between the two. The title of this is Healthful Eating a Smart Way to Sustain Brain Power, Study Finds. Or we could say Healthful Eating is a Smart Way because it's a title. We don't always use all of the words that we could. But anyway, we are talking about brain power. Now, Campbell, what is brain power?
Well, your brain power is your ability to think. It is the health of your mind and your brain and being able to stay alert and aware of everything and remember things.
Okay, and then we're talking about eating healthy. And we have a chart right there at the top of page 32. It says, plan your meal, balance your diet. Ellen, when it comes to food and so forth, do you put a lot of thought into that, or is it something that you maybe don't give as much thought as you would like?
Well, in recent couple months, probably I've put more of an emphasis on having more of a balanced diet, but in the past I've probably just kind of did it organically, had it just very natural. I would try to eat as much fruit or as much veggies as I could, but I didn't make a specific effort to do that.
Okay. How about you, Campbell? Do you put a lot of thought into your diet?
I think as I get older, I do. I think when I was younger, I didn't think too much about it. But as I do get older and I realize that a lot of my health is directly related to the food that I eat, I am more careful about what I eat.
Okay. For myself, I don't put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Ask for your opinion. But I'm kind of like Ellen when she was talking about, you know, you try to eat as much fruit as you can and so forth, but I don't set a specific plan. And as my life is fairly busy and I live in a very convenient city, so I just buy whatever food, you know, is convenient a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say I could be even more unhealthy than I am. So that's a good start, but we could always be healthier. I think a lot of times, you know, one way to do that is to cook at home, which maybe a lot of us aren't accustomed to doing. Campbell, do you cook?
Well, I live with my father-in-law and mother-in-law, so I'm very thankful that they take care of me in
lucky,
that way.
Lucky, so lucky.
Yes, so, and they kind of insist on cooking at home, which is great because, I mean, we can save money and...
And you insist on eating what they cook.
Well, sometimes. Sometimes I say I'm meeting with friends when I really just want to eat out, but...
Oh, when they're cooking something you don't like.
Yeah, but, you know, I do appreciate it.
Okay, and Ellen, do you spend time cooking?
In more recent years, I've tried to do more cooking. In the past, my mom's such a good cook, and when I kind of lived at home, I kind of just thought I wouldn't want to deprive her of the
privilege
and the pleasure of cooking.
Yeah, how convenient. I enjoy my mom's cooking as well. It's nice to have that. But, you know, a lot of times we probably choose unhealthy foods. Well, this does possibly affect our brain, and that's what we're talking about here on day one of our Newsworthy Clips article. We are on page 32, so if you haven't yet, go ahead and open up your magazines if you have it there in front of you, and we will have our first reading for today.
Newsworthy Clips. Update your vocabulary with news clips from around the world. Healthful eating is a smart way to sustain brain power, study finds. It's official. No matter where you live, healthful eating is among the best ways to protect your aging brain. Conversely, a diet that skimps on fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and fish, and includes lots of fried foods, red meat, and alcohol, is highly likely to pave a road to cognitive ruin. That's especially true if you already have some risks for developing cardiovascular disease, including hypertension, worrisome cholesterol levels, or diabetes. So says a new study that for slightly more than 5 years tracked the diets and mental states of 27,860 people, age 55 and over, in 40 middle and high income countries. On average, 16.8% of the men and women followed were found to have lost some cognitive horsepower in the study's 5-year span. But that average obscures a clear pattern. Those whose diets were most healthful were least likely to experience cognitive decline, and those with the least healthful diets were most likely. How significant was the effect? Compared to participants who reported eating diets that were least healthful, the most healthful eaters were 24% less likely to have experienced cognitive decline problems of memory, attention, and reasoning ability over a roughly 5-year period.
All right, that's some lively music to start off day one of Newsworthy Clips. And we begin with It's Official. And when you see that, you know that maybe, you know, some proclamation is being made, right, Ellen?
Right, something that has been proven or has been shown to be true. We will often say it's official.
Okay, Campbell, what is official?
Well, no matter where you live, which means it doesn't matter if you live in America, in Asia, in Europe, wherever you live, healthful eating is among the best ways to protect your aging brain.
Okay, and so they're just saying it really matters what you eat. It can really help you when it comes to your mind. And then we have the word conversely, which just means in the opposite way or on the other hand. A diet that skimps on fruits, vegetables, and so on. Let's talk about that word skimps.
Well, it just, if we look in our vocabulary focus, it says to not spend enough time or money on something. So in your diet, as today's topic is, you don't want to skimp on important foods like fruits, vegetables, and whole grains.
You don't want to leave them out.
Right.
And I do try to eat fish quite a bit, and so I don't skimp on that, and but probably could eat more nuts. I don't eat a lot of nuts. Mm. How about you, too? Do you okay with this list?
I do, actually. Partially because my in-laws are very health conscious, so they do make sure we keep a lot of fruits and vegetables in the house. I personally love nuts and fish, so I do enjoy these foods.
So, Campbell, what you're saying is if it weren't for your in-laws, you wouldn't be a very healthy eater?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I do still watch carefully what I eat. Probably wouldn't eat as many fruits and vegetables, but nuts and fish and whole grains I do eat on my own.
Okay, and Ellen, how about you?
I think I do a little better with the fruits and vegetables. The whole grains, some, not so much the nuts.
Okay, all right, you're not a very nutty person. Okay, all right. Okay, well, and then we continue on. It says includes lots of if you skimp on this and then you're eating lots of fried foods, red meat, and alcohol, drinking alcohol, you're possibly hurting yourself, your brain in particular. And we have a phrase here. It says pave a road to cognitive ruin. So in other words, they're saying if you're eating these unhealthy foods, it could be bad for your mind. But let's look at that phrase there, pave the way. It's an idiom, Ellen.
Right, and it means if something paves the way for or to something else and makes the other thing possible. So it kind of leads to something.
That's right. You think of a road, it leads to something. Well, if you're eating unhealthy foods, that could lead to cognitive ruin. When we see that word cognitive, it's just referring to our mind or thinking and how we process things and so forth. And what do we learn next, Campbell?
Well, we find out that this is especially true if you already have some risks for developing cardiovascular disease. Cardiovascular disease is health problems relating to the heart and blood vessels. So things like a heart attack, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, these are things within the cardiovascular disease family.
And then we have hypertension, which is related to high blood pressure, or essentially is high blood pressure. And then we're talking about worrisome cholesterol levels. So you see that word worrisome. That just means you're worried about something. But what is cholesterol exactly, Ellen?
Well, it's just a chemical substance that is found in your blood.
That's right, and if there's too much cholesterol in your body, it may cause heart disease. And then we have diabetes, which is a serious disease in which there's too much sugar in your blood. Mm-hmm. And so there are all sorts of problems here, Campbell.
That's right, and this is actually one of the reasons why I am very careful about what I eat, because recently, as my parents age, their bodies have been showing signs of wear. So my mom has diabetes. My dad has some hypertension, and he also had a little bit of a heart attack. So these things are hereditary, so I do need to be more careful about that, too.
That's true. And in the United States in particular, there are lots of problems, you know, health problems in general, because people don't always eat so healthy. Some people do, but in general, a lot of people don't. And so you see, you know, the results of that too. So it's a good reminder. And I think when you're younger, you don't give as much attention to this. You think, I feel okay, I'm doing okay, but we don't know, you know, what's going to happen later, right?
Right.
Right. And just to support what Campbell was saying earlier, you know, our family history plays a huge part in kind of our health. Mm-hmm. You know, as Campbell mentioned, also his family has history of diabetes, as does mine. So I know I too have to be very, very careful about certain foods or certain things that I eat.
So we can take our family history as a sort of a warning for us to eat healthy, and an extra incentive, because regardless of our family history shows that it's still good to eat healthy. So that's just an extra incentive, right?
And I think it's a good reminder that you shouldn't wait till you have problems before you start taking care of yourself. I think the best time to take care of yourself is when you are still healthy, because just because you feel healthy doesn't necessarily mean you don't have any problems, you know?
Yeah, you think of a car. You take good care of it, and over the years, it will stay in good condition, you know? And so it's the same with our bodies, and our bodies are even more important, of course. All right, so we're talking about a new study. Now we are on line 34. It says a new study that for slightly more than 5 years tracked the diets and mental states of nearly 30,000 people, age 55 and over, in 40 middle and high income countries. And so it's not just in America. It's not just in one country. This is quite an extensive study, Ellen.
Right. So, I mean, I think it's important that they do emphasize that it is middle and high income countries, because we often will associate unbalanced diets with perhaps more poverty stricken countries, because they just don't have the means or the luxury to choose, you know, certain foods.
That's the key point there. We have that variety. We have the ability to choose. And so oftentimes we choose things that are unhealthy because it's based on what we like versus what we need.
Right. And this sentence just basically highlights again what we were mentioning earlier, where it starts off saying no matter where you live. So we have this study that encompasses 40 different countries. And then also we're talking about the aging brain, so age 55 and over, so middle age and up.
All right. Well, let's get to some of the stats here. Next, we see on average 16.8% of the men and women followed were found to have lost some cognitive horsepower. Okay, so we see that term horsepower there, and it makes you think of a car. Mm-hmm. That's just a unit for measuring the power of an engine, but here they're talking about the brain. They're talking about brain power, and so they're just using that in another way. And this was all in the study's 5-year span. Okay, and so what does this really tell us, though, Campbell?
Well, it says that that average obscures a clear pattern. So it doesn't really show this clear pattern that they found, and that is that those whose diets were most healthful were least likely to experience cognitive decline, and those with the least healthful diets were most likely.
Okay, so we have this term obscures here. So this 16.8% number doesn't really reveal the true nature of this study. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really get to what they really want you to see. So if that word obscures, Ellen, tell us more about that.
Well, I guess a simple way to say it would be to block out, right? Mm-hmm. To cover something so you can't really discover it very clearly or in an easy way.
Okay.
So we see the number 16.8%. It doesn't sound like a high number, but it doesn't really give you any details about these people either.
All right. And as Campbell just said, those whose diets were most healthful were least likely to experience cognitive decline. And that's the point of this study. And so that's when we come away at the end of this, you know, article, we want to be reminded of the importance of eating healthy foods.
Right.
And so that's really the point here. And as we move on, it says, how significant was the effect? And we get a comparison here.
Right. It says, compared to participants who reported eating diets that were least healthful, the most healthful eaters were 24% less likely to have experienced cognitive decline problems of memory, attention, and reasoning ability.
Okay, so the important part there, 24% less likely to have this cognitive decline, those who ate healthy foods. Now, that number, 24%, Ellen, does that sound like a lot to you?
It's not small and it's not large.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a significant enough portion. I mean, if you think about it in a 100% model, it's almost a fourth of the people. So I think it's enough that would convince me or to at least make me aware of probably there are benefits to eating more healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Okay, so there's some benefits. But when I see all of these studies that we talk about, you think, oh, I need to do this, and then I need to do this. It can be overwhelming, right, Campbell?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to be overwhelmed. And so what do we do with all of these stats and these studies?
I think we just take it in stride and we just do our best. You know, I think most important is just to eat healthy, because no matter what, whether it really does help or not, eating healthy is always great for your body. You know,
that's right. And I think a key point is to do what you can, like you said. Don't be overwhelmed by all the studies and the stats. Just start off small and build upon that just like anything else.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think there's also the phrase, you know, everything in moderation, right? So, of course, you don't want to deny yourself some desserts every so often or some, you know, nice treats, but you don't want to overdo that. And, of course, you know, even the fruits and the nuts and the vegetables, that also needs to be done in moderation, too.
All right. Well, we have more to learn about this topic, so let's go to our next reading for today.
The authors of the latest research, which was published in the journal Neurology, suggest that the quality of one's diet might affect cognitive aging in a number of ways. Poor nutrition is likely to rob the body and brain of vitamins and minerals that not only promote the generation of healthy new cells, but help guard against inflammation, help break down fats, and protect cells from stress. Limiting inflammation, stress, and blockage is critical to keeping the brain's lifeline, its intricate web of large and small blood vessels, open, and to keep one's neurons thrumming. With the incidence of Alzheimer's disease in the United States alone expected to triple between now and 2050, diet may be a first line of defense, the authors suggest.
So now we learn that this study was actually published in the journal Neurology, and the authors actually suggest that the quality of one's diet might affect cognitive aging in different ways, all right? And so we get more details here, and we're learning about here first, poor nutrition, Ellen.
Right. So poor nutrition, it says here, is likely to rob the body and brain of vitamins and minerals that not only promote the generation of healthy new cells, but help guard against inflammation.
All right, so if you eat the right foods, apparently it should help create these or generate these healthy new cells. And what does that do, Campbell?
Well, because when you can generate new cells, that means your body, because cells break down and that's what causes aging. If you can continuously generate new cells, that means your body can continue to repair itself if it ever faces damage.
All right, and these new cells can help guard against things like inflammation. And inflammation is simply that painful and often swollen area on a person's body. All right, and also those new cells can, they help break down fats, right, and protect cells from stress. Mm-hmm. Okay, so those are all important. If you don't eat the right foods, then these things aren't happening. You're not being protected in the way that you need to be protected, and that causes aging.
That's right.
And especially here, we're talking about aging to the brain. And next, we learn about limiting inflammation, stress, and blockage. And why is this all important?
Well, it's important because it's critical to keeping the brain's lifeline. Its intricate web of large and small blood vessels open and to keep one's neurons thrumming.
Mm-hmm. All right, that word lifeline, Campbell, we see that in different contexts. What does it mean?
A lifeline is what keeps someone alive. It's what, you know, helps someone stay safe and healthy. So when we say we throw someone a lifeline, we mean we help them in some way.
And we have the dashes there. You can actually take out that all in the middle, and it still makes sense. And it actually helps you to understand the sentence in some ways as well. If we're talking about the inflammation, the stress, and the blockage, is critical to keeping, limiting that is critical to keeping the brain's lifeline open mm-hmm. and to keep one's neurons thrumming. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that first, and then we'll go back there in the middle. We've already talked about keeping the lifeline open and so forth, but then we're talking about neurons. What are neurons, Ellen?
Well, they are nerve cells that send information throughout the body. So your brain is full of these neurons, and they help to kind of send signals throughout the body to tell your body what to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then we have the word thrumming, and you can think of this as like a rhythmic sound, mm-hmm. and you think of the rain coming down, it's kind of thrumming. And I think here they're just talking about allowing it to continue, that continuous flow. And yeah. So basically they're saying you limit these things, and it's critical to keeping the brain's lifeline open and the neurons going and so forth. And then we get an example here of the lifeline. How is that described, Campbell?
Well, the lifeline here that they're referring to is the intricate web of large and small blood vessels within the brain. When we talk about something that's intricate, it's having a lot of small parts or details that are arranged in a complicated way, okay? And so if you think about the blood vessels in the brain, they're all interconnected. There's thousands of blood vessels in there, and all each one is very important to carry the oxygen and the nutrition to the brain so that it can continue to function.
Okay, so intricate being complex is another way to think of it, and our bodies are very complex. And it's interesting to study biology and so forth when you're learning about the human body and to find out how complex we are and how we were created that way. It's mm-hmm. fascinating, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, as we move on to the last paragraph, it says, with the incidence of Alzheimer's disease in the United States alone expected to triple between now and 2050, diet is really important. We have a phrase here, the first line of defense, Ellen.
Right. So the first line of defense, of course, if you know any military terms or military phrases, this is one of them. It's just this idea of when you go into battle, the first line of defense is what is going to hopefully be the most impactful.
Okay, and of course, Alzheimer's is, you know, cognitive decline in and of mm-hmm. itself, and we've talked about that many, many times here in advance.
Right.
And so they're saying here, eating healthy foods could help to fight against that, right?
That's right.
Hopefully.
So basically, this article is in line with the new trend in medicine, which is called preventative medicine. In the past, medicine was almost after the fact. So after you got sick, then you go see a doctor, and the doctor would give you medicine to help you get better. But now doctors and scientists are focusing more on preventative, which means helping people to stay healthy and not get sick.
All right. Well, the chart there on page 32 hopefully will help us to stay healthy. It tells us more about how to plan our meals. And what does it tell us about drinks, Ellen?
Well, it says to avoid sugary drinks and to drink about 2 liters of water daily.
Mm-hmm. All right, so don't have too much sugar in your coffee or tea or too many soft drinks, right? And then it goes on to dairy. What kind of milk should we drink?
Low-fat milk, so just milk that's been processed to take out the fat.
All right, and then, of course, vegetables make half your meal fruits and vegetables. Half your meal, that's quite a bit. I like my meat, but I like vegetables and fruit as well, and so I think I can deal with that. Mm-hmm. I don't actually do that all the time, of course, mm-hmm. but it's a good tip.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about proteins, Ellen?
Well, it says prefer white meat and eat more vegetarian proteins.
That's right. So when it comes to proteins, one tip is the fewer legs it has, the more healthy it is. So vegetables, vegetarian proteins have no legs, so that is the most healthy. Fish have no legs, which is healthier, you know, which is just as healthy. And then you have poultry and then pig and then your red meats like...
I like pigs.
Yeah.
I like pork.
You do.
But I will eat the vegetables with it.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Sure. But I'm just saying that, you know, the tip is the fewer legs it has, the healthier it is for you.
All right. That's a good tip, and it's easy to remember. We move on to fruit. We are supposed to eat seasonal fruits and to buy local grown products.
Yes.
And that's a good thing to remember, buy those local products and to eat fruit that's in season. And then we have grains. We are to eat whole grains, which we've already learned about. And then we have one tip here. What is the tip here in this infographic?
It says, plan and eat small portions of food and vary your diet.
All right. Small portions. Well, that's a funny thing because in the United States, we have big portions. So this
yes.
is a good reminder. Here in Asia, we have much smaller portions and overall. So that is helpful. The more food you're given, the more you're likely to eat, right? Well, we have been talking about healthful eating and how that relates to brain power. But tomorrow, we will move on to a totally different topic. So please come back to find out what that is, or read ahead in your magazine. Until then, this is Brandon.
Campbell.
Ellen.
Saying goodbye.
Bye.